And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Unafeared, 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 unafeared. You're undeclared. You're independent. From me, you're Ernest Hancock. You're in Phoenix, Arizona. From the beautiful studios of Freedom's the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com, Paul Rosenberg, freemansperspective.com, freemansperspective.com, freeman with an S. We're going to talk about his most recent newsletter, August 2019, Civilizational Change at the Personal Level. Where else does it happen? Okay, well, we're going to say, yo, what's up to Paul Rosenberg. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, Ernie, how are you?
I'm more than a wonderful. Now, Paul Rosenberg knows a lot about a lot of things. You know, he's done a lot of things. He has a lifestyle, you know, as a capitalist with a broad range of interests, philosophy, theology, history, psychology, physics. He's been very involved with cryptography projects since the 90s. Paul's diverse interest base is reflected in his extensive repertoire of published titles, including A Lodging of Wayfaring Men, Production versus Plunder, and The Breaking Dawn, not to mention 55 engineering and construction books. In addition, Paul is the co-founder of the Crypto Hippie Privacy Service. So Crypto Hippie, you know, we're going to talk about that a little bit, I am sure. All right. In his latest issue, 101, it has Toffler's Third Wave. We get to hear about that. Zero sum models, last stand, you know, it's like talk about abundance and such like that. Let's see, maximization versus moral courage, how Rome became Western civilization. You know, I like to get to that, but we start off with you're talking about the cult of the saints. We need to know about that, and Toffler's Third Wave. Can you start us off there, Paul?
Sure. Actually, Alvin Toffler's Third Wave was a major event for me, a major intellectual event back in 1980-something. I came upon him by accident. I was listening to the radio as I was driving somewhere, and he was on an interview. And I thought, my God, this is a guy who's actually talking about something that's really interesting regarding, you know, civilization, history, and everything else. It wasn't just the usual academic prepackaged, you know, stuff that ends up with our way of life is the greatest thing ever. He's terrific. What he did is he said that civilization, human civilization, he likened it to three waves. First being the agricultural revolution, so that, as they call it, which is, you know, people learning how to plant corn and wheat and be farmers, which was, you know, a major big deal in its day. And then the Industrial Revolution, and then the Technological Revolution that we're into now. And he was writing about this in 1979. And so he was way, way ahead of his time, but he says it's like a wave. And it happens slowly, and this new civilization rolls over top of the second civilization. And there are all these cross currents as one wave is going in and the other wave is going out, and it's a mixed up mess. And that really is the right way to look at this, because we have all kinds of things going on. The world is very complicated. But if you step back and you far enough, you can see this new wave of civilization rolling over the old one. And boy, was this guy ever right.
What do you mean, new rolling over? Is it just a general public opinion thing? Is it a political operation?
No, no. What
operation?
I mean is things like let's take personal computers, the internet, it's particularly web browsing and the ability to use the internet, encryption, Bitcoin, BitTorrent, all of these various things are a new model. They didn't come out of the universities and the academic institutions of the second wave, the industrial era. They came from, you know, outsiders, from the proverbial dropouts and geeks. You know, who was Steve Wozniak? He was a guy who quit college. Steve Jobs, even Bill Gates, of whom I'm not a fan. These were guys who were doing it a new way, and what we're seeing in this is a new model of production going over the factory model and slowly taking it over.
Well, yeah, but you know, Elon Musk went to Stanford for 3 days.
Well, yeah, I'm not talking in absolutes, Artie. There's always exceptions.
Yeah, you always get at least 3 days, you know. You know, that's one of the things that I'm finding. I'm talking to my grandkids, and they're starting, one of my step-grandkids just graduated high school. And mm-hmm. I'm going, you know, college isn't what it used to be. You know, it's kind of, if you really got a passion, you might want to just start. I mean, you're going to come out, actually learn something, made some money, didn't go into debt, and didn't get all wasteful spending of your parents' money in the college that don't matter. I mean, it's called, I don't know, the internet or something. And I'm wondering, and you see cracks in it over the years where large corporations are going, degrees don't matter. In fact, it's not a benefit really for us anyway. We'd rather you take our test, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, is that part of the data that you're coming across as you're doing this? Is there any reports on that increasing, that people are like?
Yeah, actually, I saw one this morning. I think it was, I'd have to get the exact numbers, but a third or a half of the youngest generation, Generation Z, whatever, you know, that is, really don't, are questioning whether they want to go to college. They'd rather go get a job. And even the kids who have colleges looking at them, you know, the kids with really good grades or whatever, they're tending to take jobs rather than going to college. I mean, it's four, well, that's not only 4 years of your life anymore. It's more like six these days. If you want a PhD, it's like 8 years. It's sick.
Well, I remember Peter Thiel gave them $100,000 to not go to college. You remember that?
Yeah. College is just a bad, listen, people go to college for social reasons, not for education. These days. Now, once upon a time, college was actual education, and it mattered in the context of that era. But that era is gone. And colleges now are about, for social reasons. We want respect from the people next door. People will think I'm weird if I won't go to college. If I don't go to college, I'll never get the pretty girl. You know, that's.
Well, you're not even
stuff.
Talking about, you know, the partay at college. You're talking about the social implications of having gone to college or get that.
Exactly,
you know,
right. You've got the magic piece of paper that allows you to get the job that your neighbor
which isn't
can't.
So magic anymore. And what happened in
that's
the
right.
80s, as I'm doing restaurant management and so on, and I was training a lot of people coming out of college, and I go, God, man, these people are, yeah, but they got college. And I'm like, what is it? I don't. And finally, I figured out what it was. The public companies that a lot of these work for, big corporations or whatever, what happened was at a certain level of management, there was a box check of what the percentage of management at operational levels were college graduates had some kind of impact on their offering on the stock market, the value of their stock. So somebody socially and economically engineered to say, to fill this management position, you have to have this or you don't get the check off or over a percentage of something or something. And I'm going,
exactly right.
That is
nothing
stupid.
To do with quality.
Stupid. It was stupid. I didn't see it. There was no benefit. It was stupid, stupid. But when we come back, the cult of the saints, you know, played a lot in the Western world. I want that defined before we get to Toffler's third wave. And as we go through what you've discovered, and I found this issue very interesting. I want to talk about a lot of little details with it. Paul Rosenberg, freemansperspective.com, and his latest newsletter you can sign up for.
Crimes of the Crown by Captain Mark. The crown casts the world in shadow and claims to be our guiding light. Cowards clamor for security from boogeymen and ghost stories. While I say these hobgoblins are imaginary, I say those they propped up as our liberators are now subsisting on our bondage. I say there is freedom in the black, and that's exactly where we intend to go. The crown banishes its own officers for exposing its crimes and tortures dissidents to the brink of madness. It dominates the globe and swallows the wealth of generations, leaving only blood and excrement. The crown calls it piracy to explore frontiers beyond its grasp. So the time has come for us to define the conduct among pirates. I say the crown has trampled our necks long enough. Need decentralized solutions to centralized problems? Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels? Or just want some swag to let the crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com. We won't be hard to find.
How are you, Paul?
You know, I'm pretty well, Ernie.
We're good. The Freedom Fest, you missed the Trump Fest.
It was that bad, huh?
Trump Fest. There was like, they had the main room was full. They had Candace Owen and Wayne Allen Root debating India guy, I can't remember his name, and Doug Casey on immigration. At the beginning, wow, they raised hands of hundreds of people. Two-thirds were for build the wall. After the debate, wow, you know, like, weren't much change. But it was, you know, it was Trump, 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 Trump. And I'll bet you this next year. And I heard last year they thought it was a little too anarchist or something. Or but I'm going, man, not this freaking year. Damn. And it was, there was a an app they had there called Feed Me. You know, FEED.ME. And
okay,
it was, I go by there, oh, Ernie, hi, when it was a Republican activist. She married a former attorney general, you know, Bob Corbin. Was it Corbin? Bob Corbin, yeah. Here in Arizona. And she's like, oh, Ernie, hi, you know, and I barely recognized her or whatever. She just knew me from whatever. She wouldn't tell me all about it. So she's sitting there showing me what it was a news app that you picked the feeds from all these different news sources like USA Today, Washington Post, New York Times. I mean, it's all traditional CNN, Fox, that kind of crap. And it would take and feed onto be like your news feed, like Google News or something on your phone. And you would hit up or down on any of the stories. I want to see more of this, less of that, whatever. And it would automatically, oh, yeah, it's just so the advertise. Yeah, it's for advertising. It's free. It's advertised. And I'm going, I guarantee freaking T, every time I hit that button up or down, it's going to be recorded by somebody. And there's a terms of agreement thing that's going to be, I totally agree to whatever the hell you're doing. You know, well, you know, yeah, that's what I thought, you know, and it's all in the name of Trump. All right, here we go.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence, Paul Rosenberg. And there's just, Paul was to be a speaker at Freedom Fest, and he had plane problems or something. What was up with that, Paul?
Oh, a huge thunderstorm came through, and I was just, you know, I was the idiot sitting on the floor in the airport trying to figure out how to get to Vegas. And it didn't happen. I was looking at, you know, flights for $1,000 to take a $200 flight.
Nah,
and I still couldn't find one.
You didn't miss that. I mean, it's a nice conference. Got a lot of people that we'll be talking to over the next weeks. And, you know, it was interesting, but it was heavily political this time and heavy Trump. Trump, 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 Trump. And, yeah, we'll talk about some other stuff there, but I want to get through your issue here because I found it of interest. But I need to know the cult of the saints. You know, just describe that real quick because it plays a role throughout this.
Yeah, it played a shockingly important role. The cult of the saints, and just so everyone knows, that's not using cult in an insulting way. It's actually a proper term. This is the particularly Catholic version of praying to saints. People still do it these days. But in the old days, say 400, 500, 600 AD, it was a big thing. They had big shrines, and to have, you know, a saint buried in your town was a big, big deal. It was much bigger than it is now. And it's a rather odd practice. Certainly, Protestants would, you know, complain about it at great length, and with some, you know, some scriptures they can pull out for sure. And there were people at the time who thought it was a little extreme, but it was necessary for the time, that's the real shock of the whole thing, because the Roman worldview was falling apart. You know, the Romans and the Greeks before them and all the way back to the Sumerians had a particular view of the universe. They had the higher realms above the earth, the stars and so on, and then the lower realms beneath the earth and the moon. And it's very similar all the way from 3,000-4,000 BC to 500 AD. And all of a sudden, it all fell apart. So it would be like people now saying, well, you know, we all have this idea of heaven and hell. And what happened that just went away? And if people couldn't refer to it, I mean, atheists refer to heaven and hell as a model of seeing the world. And what happened if it just went away? Well, that's what happened to the Romans, and they were stuck with no images. Peter Brown, who's one of the greatest historians, who's quite an elderly man right now, called it the slow and horrid crumbling of ancient boundaries. And that's what it was like for these people and the cult of the saints.
In what way? When you say boundaries, it was just a world view? It was just what is and isn't and where rain came from or something? I mean, what are you talking about?
Right. It's not only that, it's the way of looking at the world. The big thing about let's call it the Enlightenment, was it gave humans a mechanical view of the universe. Everything operated by law. Mm-hmm. Everything had a particular way it would work mathematically, predestined. That changed everybody's view of the universe, and people became enamored with everything mechanical and measurable and so on and so forth. We don't see it that way because we grew up in it, but it's a major difference from what came before. And
yeah, before,
the same,
I mean,
thing
you,
happened
you can,
in the Romans.
You could probably think of it in a lot of times, you know, pagan this or native that or something. They had a story.
Yeah.
There was a story of why the grass was green and why the moon came up and its patterns of the stars of the sun of the god of something. And when you start getting in that it could be counted on, no, every day this is going to happen. Oh, every so often on a clockwork we're going to have an eclipse. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And all of a sudden it takes the mystery out of it. And all of a sudden individuals become as powerful as the priest a generation before from the information.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and something not too dissimilar from that happened to the Romans. They knew the way the universe was structured. I mean, they had known it for thousands of years. They knew how the universe was built, and all of a sudden it wasn't anymore. And people, that's a particular type of being cut loose from boundaries, from mental boundaries, that people nowadays don't understand. You know, there are dark ages. We call it the dark age of Europe, which is a really kind of a bad term, but it was an in-between time. And there was another one from the Greeks from about 1200 to 800 BC. And it takes people hundreds of years to recover from it and to come up with a new model of living. The dark age of the Greeks went on for 300-400 years before all of a sudden they had new stories and new ways of looking at the world. In Europe, it took hundreds of years before they realized that Rome was actually gone and wasn't coming back. And it wasn't that they wanted the Praetorians to, the various officers to come back. It was because they lost their model of the world and they felt abandoned and lost without it. And this is the type of thing that happens when things change. that is the bigger thing, actually, than power structures.
Well, in here you described, you know, this Toffler's third wave as, you know, these different waves. You had the rise of agriculture, you know, it's kind of human development to where you're around a field. I mean, you start to have villages and towns and so on. You start to, you know, herd animals and such. Then you get industrialization. You know, that was kind of, you know, it peaks after, you know, World War II. You start having this we're going to assembly line everything. So that has an impact. And then you, you're getting into this third wave, which is what? Technological?
Yeah, technological, and it's becoming decentralized, which is a completely new model rather than the centralized model. You take Bitcoin, which is designed to be purposely to be decentralized. It's really hard for people to understand. You've tried to explain Bitcoin to people. It they don't quite get it because it's a different model. It's not that it's technically that hard or you know, that it's just requires so much brain power to understand it. It's not that hard, but it's so different that it takes people time to wrap their head around it.
Well, this is one thing that this newsletter really is about, is to get your head around what's coming and why it has such a big impact. And then, you know, Western civilization and where its influences and so on and why and so on. I want to get into that too. But here we have, I'm going to have a meeting this next week with some guys that have been working hard in the Philippines on providing this new model of government, because they don't have like a county recorder you can go down and I want to buy one of these 7,000 islands, you know. Well, you need that blockchain. I mean, you know, so this is the kind of stuff that's going on, and this new wave of existence and how it's going to work. And I want to dwell on that just a little bit with Paul Rosenberg when we come back, and we'll talk about zero sum, positive sum, and we'll learn something. Yeah, that's what when we come back, that's what I wanted, you know, you're talking about this. It's a new, you know, a new way of thinking, and as opposed to this zero sum of I got it and you don't now, this increasing pie thing, and then the description of that and what you're talking about there, and that's what we'll do when we come back, okay?
Okay.
The yeah, we had Jackalope. It's still going on. It kind of turned from 3 days to 2 week kind of deal. And so it's, you know, they started a week early. And the reason we started it in the first week of August is because the first weekend is that's when the rains start, the monsoon and everything, the meadow, everything turns green. They go, it's so dry. I go, because you came a week early. I told you we did this on purpose, man. You know, now it's all green. You know, within, it's like a 3 day thing. It's just, boom. I go, see, told you.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I've seen that kind of thing happen. It's amazing.
And it's so they're still up there, you know, partying and stuff and having a good time. And I, you can, this Jackalope, this nobody's in charge, so everybody is experiment thing in the forest has been, this is the eighth year. And we did it, it specifically to demonstrate, you know, how spontaneous order works, what can and can't happen, and how it goes bad. And, you know, and we'll see. You know, it's at, it's kind of, you know, wax and wane a little bit. This year was very cool, but it's you can just see the more popular something gets, the more dense it gets, the more people there, the more somebody wants to, you know, take it and mold it and brand it and be in control of it and do it. It's just an experiment to see how long this can go, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just like, nope. But it's interesting. You can see all the creepings in of everything. You know?
Yeah.
You got to have a jail. You got to have a sheriff. You got to have a stand. You got to have a rules. You got, all right, here was a good one. They had a brothel comes up and
it's
the Liberty Lovers escort service, okay? Liberty Lovers, okay? I thought that was good. So
Yeah.
So it was, they're like in their mid-20s. One was a transvestite guy to girl, and they get all the details. They'll come on, and we'll talk about it later. And then a very attractive, you know, cute brunette, short hair. I don't know, spend all of, you know, 3 minutes talking to them, getting them scheduled, and we'll talk about it later. But what happened was, is they had these laminated, purple-colored, 8.5 by 11 sheets that were taped up on each of the porta-johns, And it was like, yeah, what's up over here? A little, and some of them had some, you know, the kind of risque, you know, photos. And the complaint of a lot of the more conservatives, hey, man, you have your problem. I mean, damn, you know, these pictures that kid left, man, are we kid tolerant now instead of kid friendly? I mean, where's the line here, you know? So, so we'll have, I interviewed him a little bit, talked about that. Hey, I'd be a good neighbor. You know, nobody, you're feeling welcome. Everything's good. Yeah. Well, I think people know you're here. I don't know how many signs you need or how much.
Yeah. You don't have to do a lot of advertising for that business.
Yeah. You know, come on. And, but they didn't bring, you know, it's like they wrapped a tree around with a tarp and put a chair and you get a lap dance or something. I mean, I was, whatever. They went minimalist, you know, but they had a banner, you know? So it's just these kind of things. You get the mining camp, these kind of things happen. You know, it's just, you know, what's your position? You know, what are you going to do? I'm like, hey, man, it's an experiment as far as I'm concerned. See how this goes. I think you need some running water. But the so, you know, it's always something every year. All right, here we're coming back.
Radio Network on the air in your area. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Of Mr. Paul Rosenberg, Three Man's Perspective, .com. Okay, you know, we're learning a lot about different things. One thing, I just want to make sure we get some of these terms in here explained and understood. Because in here, there's one thing he's talking about is that one of the philosophies that are in the zero-sum model's last stand. Economists some years ago stumbled upon two different sets of assumptions about the world, a positive-sum view of existence and a zero-sum understanding of existence. Let's talk about the difference and what that means and the impact it had on the future. Paul, go.
Okay. Zero sum just means it's the old idea of there's only so many pieces of pie, that there's only so much stuff, and if you want to have more, some other schnook is going to get less. And the positive sum view of existence is, you know what, we can make new pies. We can do more. We can create new things. We can create new ways of doing things to overcome the scarcity problem. We can plant more, we can grow more, whatever. There's all kinds of ways around it. So it's zero sum, which is, you know, if you want more, I got to have less. Or positive sum is, well, you go ahead and have more, and I'll make some for myself, too. Now, the truth is that positive sum is really almost always true. You can always make more. Humans, if nothing else, are creative beings. We create all kinds of stuff. It's crazy how what we create. But still, this zero-sum view of life hangs on. Well, it's a long story. But all of the things that are associated with centralized power tend to go zero-sum. Foreign affairs, the intelligence community, politics. These are all I win, you lose. And they purvey that view of the world to people. If the Russians are going to do better, that means we'll be look less in comparison to them. And it's a real dark, dangerous, ultimately violent way of looking at the world. And it's not even true, because everybody now is massively richer than we were 200, 300 years ago.
Thomas Jefferson didn't have a refrigerator or a microwave. Not that that's
a friend of mine used to talk about J.D. Rockefeller, the Rockefeller Sr. He said, you know, the guy was the richest man, you know, had what today would be billions or trillions. And, you know, I have better stuff than he has. I have the microwave. I have a better car. I have, you know, so on and so forth. And it's true. But so what you also find out is all the new things, the new ways of doing things tend towards the positive sum model. The third wave, if you will, of stuff, the technological model, almost always goes towards the positive sum. Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies. You know, big pharma, the old way, it tends to be zero-sum. We get the patent, you don't. But biohackers just share information and make better stuff. In all of these areas, you find the new things, the better things, are the positive-sum model, and the old things, the things that are built around centralized coercion, tend to be of the zero-sum model. There are exceptions,
is there an incentive for them to keep it zero-sum? I mean, they're going, nope, we got to take from here. We got to go Klingon on this outfit. We got to steal somebody's oil and get a treaty of whatever. You know, that.
Oh yeah, very definitely.
So it's a fear thing they're using.
Once you have people who look at the world positively, saying, we can do this, we can make this, they begin to feel confident, they begin to feel like they can cooperate with other people. Why does anybody need politicians? What do we need to obey some, you know, grand poobah guy for? It's crazy. It's stupid. Oh, obey me, and I'm going to take half your money, and by the way, I'm going to send your children to go fight battles for me, and so on, and because fear. Because, you know, the other guys could do something bad. Something terrible might happen, and they might do it to you, so you need us to protect you. Mm. Confident people don't need that.
Well, so what's the goals? To make you not competent, not confident, not...
you need them.
Why they
remember why they need us.
All right, well, this, you know, you had a list here of zero sum and mixed and positive sum, and you gave some examples, and I'm wondering if, you know, like foreign affairs, zero sum, small commerce, positive sum. What's the criteria? How are you defining each of these? Like big pharma, zero sum, biohackers, positive sum. You know, give us an example of the criteria you use to put everything in its place.
Sure. What it is the model that they use for making decisions and the model they put out to people. Big pharma, again, is an easy one because, you know, it's all about the patents. And if I get the patent, you don't. And big pharma, they do crazy legal stuff, you know, suing people to break patents this way or that. And it's just a big turf war. It's just, you know, we're going to get this and we're going to kill you if we have to get it. Then, of course, you know, selling their drugs for, you know, $1,000 a dose or whatever the hell they do.
These guys, I seen a gentleman, a young guy, hippy-dippy weatherman, and he gets up and he says, you know, you can make your own EpiPens. You know, you can do this. You can biohack that. You need a lab and little bit of a, you know, whatever. And they're going out and making medicines, showing people how to make their own medicines, how to bypass all this stuff, how to maintain their standard of living and not give it all to pharma in the last days up. And I'm just, I find that enormously hopeful, but it's a totally different way of thinking, and it comes down to IP. I mean, a lot of this stuff, when you're looking at a lot of this stuff, none of these zero-sum things exist without government saying somebody can't compete, or you can't do it another way, or you got to have a shiny badge, give you a permit. You got, you know, something. I'm going, it seems like everything is coercion. Government is, we need to bypass all that.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a bad model. You know, the model of governance is, you know, we have a small group of people, one or 400, whatever it is, that they're going to make all the rules, and they're going to force you to do what they say. And they're going to, you know, take half your stuff. And by the way, you have to call them righteous and ordained of God and the only possible way to live. It's crazy. But that's the way, that's the model that is held since the Bronze Age.
Well,
and
then
it's nuts.
Then you come into this maximization versus moral courage. And in here, it's kind of, you know, there has to be some... stand up against this kind of, what are you talking about? Well, in what way? Is it political, philosophical, industrial, you know, entrepreneur? What? Now you got it described. We need to combat these limitations. In what way? What are we doing?
Well, you know, maximization is, you know, if you suck up to the system, you get, you know, a few extra digits on your grade point average. You make an extra percent or two of profit by tweaking everything the way everybody else does. You get a little more social prestige. The system, any system that exists over any time, kind of becomes a framework in which people see the world. And if you see it differently, you're weird or something's wrong with you, or at least you're dangerous, and it becomes a trap. It becomes a cage for people. And to break out of it requires you to accept that people think you're weird, or that they say bad things about you, or very occasionally even worse. But it's the only way we actually proceed. Otherwise, we just stay locked in this cage because, you know, everyone else does it that way, and my dad didn't do it that way, so...
Well, you describe moral courage here. You go, moral courage, on the other hand, doing things that are right rather than prescribed. I like that. Do things that are right rather than prescribed. Ugh. Comes at a cost. The old regimes, because they become a framework through which system-minded people view the world, cause new things to be reflexively opposed. Yeah, and then you go on a quote by Carol Quigley, but that whole idea right there is that, you know, doing things that are right rather than prescribed. Moral courage.
From the third letter of Captain Mark. The Crown's observation conditions us to be dishonest with ourselves. Therefore, constant surveillance produces a society of constant deception. Honest communication is the seed of civilized conduct. To deny us this seed is to deny us its fruits. But the Crown's primary objective is to stifle free thought itself, to make its subjects incapable of dissent. Seasoned pirates have always encrypted messages and codes and ciphers, so intercepted transmissions were incomprehensible. But today, the Crown possesses advanced tools of pattern recognition that document, profile, and predict our every move. Today, piracy requires hailing frequencies completely invisible to the Crown. We are tired of poltergeists in the static. Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels, or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
Okay, Paul, when we come back, I want to do the new social unit, you know, and
okay.
And of course, what your addition here, your newsletter is building up to, is the different ways of thinking and how the different unit, you know, what the Romans thought and how they used to think, and, you know, logic and reason in comparison with, you know, law and dictate and yada, 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 yada. But, mm-hmm. you know, it gets up to where, you know, what I'm building up to and interesting here is the new social unit. And the reason is because when we do like jackalope and you see these things, when nobody's in charge, what's the predominant philosophy? Well, it's a liberty thing, and you took down my, you know, sign of me, you know, fingering myself at eye level of a 5-year-old. That was my private property. Who's in trouble here, for me putting it up or you taking it down? You see my point?
Right.
You know,
yeah,
so
sure.
So these are, you know, awesome things. I dwell on stupid little shit like that because that's where devil's in the details, you know? And
well, you know, that's where we have to just be content or accept the fact that humanity has a lot of growing left to do, and things are going to be sloppy, and there's going to be, you know, this liberty thing we talk about is not perfect. It's just the right way to move forward. It's the only way to move forward. It's not going to provide perfection. And we have to accept that it's not going to be perfect because humanity's not perfect yet.
Well, see, to try and prevent, you know, I remember having this argument before and discussion, and it got down to for what might happen, or somebody might offend, or somebody might aggress,
yeah.
or somebody might, they're willing to create this entire freaking leviathan of we're going to take all your crap and why you need us. And I'm going,
It's a superstition. It's a massive superstition. You know, because people aren't perfect, because there are conflicts in life, we're going to create this monster that takes half of everybody's stuff and sends our children to die? Are you nuts? But it's, you know, it's a...
But it gives you a high social credit score.
Yeah.
No, which is, you know, they use the peer pressure for this kind of... I'm just being around long enough, you know, just seeing this, you know, play out, I'm going... Yeah, I'm glad I'm alive. At, you know, I always thought I was born at the right time. You know, I got to be old enough to realize landing on the moon was like a big deal. And most high-tech thing in a car was the AM radio and the ignition coil. I mean, you know. And
that's right. And all of a sudden, I remember when I had a car with an FM radio, man.
Woo! Wow. All right, here we go.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock. We got Paul Rosenberg on. You know, one of the things that is building up in his this month's newsletter, freemansperspective.com, is that it's building up to a new social unit. You know, a new social unit. The title of his newsletter is, for this month, Civilizational Change at the Personal Level. Well, we talked about, you know, different philosophies and how people had a beat on things, you know. Well, now it's getting to a new social unit. Rome had many social units running downward from the family of the emperor through the classes of the tribunes, equestrians, decurion, and other blah, blah, blah. The new social unit. Let's talk about that a little bit, will you? Then we'll get into the new cement for their social world, because I thought this was interesting about what we're talking about. Go, Paul.
Okay. You know, the Romans were dominators. They thought domination was the way of life.
Klingons!
Yes, Klingons, that's right. And they were very strongly that way, and all of a sudden, they're falling apart, and there are these Christians who are now taking over, or at least taking over most people's minds, and they believe in the brotherhood of man. And it's a completely different model, and it left people wandering between the two. But did it change things? It killed slavery. Slavery had existed since, well, the Sumerians we're not sure it goes back farther than that, but that goes to like 5,000 BC. There was always slavery, and in just a few centuries, these people killed it because they believed in the brotherhood of man, which was a major, major change. And it was strongly reflected in the way that they lived. In a Roman city, you had the bosses, and then you had all the schmucks who lived there and worked there, but they were completely separate. All of a sudden, under Christian Europe, the serfs, the small farmers, everybody, they all sat in the same church. And they all listened to the same gospel, and they all listened, you know, they were all in the same community. And the village became not a place of the haves and haves not, where they coexist, but an actual social unit. And it changed Europe. Rome was not like Europe. I mean, it held the same territory, but it was a very different place. And really, Europe took place because of this change, of the village becoming an actual social unit, not a camp of the elite where the plebs were.
And then, of course, they take it. We see a group, and we need to go put a handle on it and carry it around and fund our stuff and get wars and, you know, and government ensues. You know, so it's I see that happening. I saw that Freedom Fest was definitely, it was a, you know, it was God, country, and Trump, man. I mean, I was like, holy crap. And I talked to people about it that were there the year before, and they said the year before was more anarchist to the point of being uncomfortable for them, and this was more what they kind of, I don't know, felt comfortable. I see this wax and wane thing, and what you're describing and the things that you write about and the things that you talk about is larger mega trends. You know, it's influences, and you talk a lot about Western civilization, you know, how Rome became the West. And I'm like, what does that mean? The West, Western civilization, when they talk about that, and they'll bring up Judeo-Christian ethics, or they'll talk about, you know, Rome and Greek influences. But what is Western democracies or Western civilization? What does it even mean?
Well, a Western civilization is the civilization that began in Europe after Rome. People talk about, you know, well, there were Romans and the Greeks and everything. Yeah, well, we picked up a few things from them, like you pick up things from anywhere you can if you're smart. But Greece and Rome were slavery societies. They were built upon slavery as an institution. It was an economic system. And Western civilization, which is correctly called a Judeo-Christian civilization because that's where its ethics came from Judaism, Christianity, which, you know, are cousins at least, and it became a different type of society. It became based upon these Judeo-Christian ethics, primarily Christianity, and upon capitalism, what you and I would call free market capitalism. But it didn't exist in the world before that. I mean, it existed in pieces. The Phoenician traders, other traders through the years, were always good capitalists, as we might say it. But it didn't exist on a societal level because capitalism replaced slavery as the way of gathering surplus. Slavery was about gathering surplus. The slave never got to hold his or her stuff, and all the surplus went to the master. Well, the Christians decided that was immoral. It was wrong because these were also children of God, and they got rid of it piece by piece, but they had to replace it by being clever, by figuring out how to arrange affairs that they could build better products and better services and better ways to provide them and still have some surplus left over to invest in the new barn or the new, you know, the new field, pulling the stumps out of the field around the corner. And it's a completely different model of life. And this Christian capitalist model of life is what made the Renaissance and made the Enlightenment and made the Industrial Revolution and is bringing us to where we are now. It's also, like I say, is what killed slavery. And this is what formed, that is Western civilization in a nutshell.
So slavery was killed by a philosophy from Christian teachings of thou shalt not have slaves? I mean, in there's a bunch of slaves in the Bible, as I remember.
No, you're exactly right. The Bible doesn't say that you shall not have slaves, which is really an interesting little point, but that's another discussion. But what happened was that people began to see the other person as a brother, a sister, a people who are also children of God. And once you see them as socially equal, slavery falls apart. Slavery requires a legal separation between the slaves and the masters. Once they're all held to the same law, once they're all held to the same standard, slavery can't continue for terribly long.
Well, then you talk about unregulated sociability. You know, unregulated. Well, that's kind of where you're going here. You know, expand on that a little bit.
Sure. Under Rome, classes were very strong, very powerful. You were born into this class or that class with certain obligations, and you couldn't get out of it. That was it. You were done. It was especially bad for women. Roman law was horrible for women. The Middle Ages were a liberation for women. But Roman law was very strict and very selective. You were in this class or that class, and that was it. Once that changed, people could talk to other people and cooperate with them however they wanted because the big beast was gone. And all of a sudden, they started having new types of relationships. Again, particularly for women who were terribly regulated in the old world, all of a sudden they could do things. And you saw this in the religious actions. There were a lot of women who were saints and women who were dedicated to saints. And there were lots and lots, thousands and thousands of people who took pilgrimages. They had pilgrims. There was a whole literature of pilgrims' guides. In the 600s and 700s A.D., in the middle of the supposed Dark Ages. And a lot of women were involved and traveled and went places. This was unheard of. This was impossible under Rome.
Well, you talked
about social actions were set free.
Before we run out of time, the resacralizing the West. You know, what are you talking about there?
Oh, boy. the West has lost its transcendent purpose. For better or worse, and it was both better and worse, there were abuses always. I mean, on all of these things, there are, you know, where there's no perfection in any of this because humanity isn't perfect, and we're not going to have perfection from any of this. We have improvement, not perfection. But the West used to enjoy a sense of transcendent purpose. People understood that they were building something great, that they were making the world better, that they were bringing God and civilization and goodness into the world. Who thinks that today? Almost nobody. I mean, people like you and me, maybe. People who are listening to this show, maybe. But the average guy in the street, he thinks that he lives in a beast of a civilization that has done nothing but destroy the rest of the world and feed off it. That's bull.
Freemansperspective.com. Paul Rosenberg. Such thoughts can be yours for a subscription. There we go. Thanks, Paul.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah, no, I'm glad a lot of people such as yourself do the research on this, you know, put the ideas in print that we can, you know, put out and so on. And I'm kind of a hands-on observer in practice, kind of see how it works guy. And I'm seeing through the decades of me doing a lot of this stuff, you know, with different spontaneous order things and so on, I have yet to find anything as lasting, as effective, and as transformative as just leaving people alone to come up with their own solution and formulas and medicines and ideas and concepts and island habitation of whatever the hell, you know? And I like the idea of being able to select, but they keep taking every single square inch of land and they want to put it under a cookie cutter of this is how and you have to. And I'm going, of course we're going to Mars just to get away. I mean, where?
Just to get the hell away from the maniacs, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, the garden spot of freaking Mars, it still doesn't beat probably most places on this planet, maybe even the South Pole. I mean, you know, I'm going... You know, can I just go to the South Pole or out in the ocean or something? I mean, they got like air and stuff, you know? So but I can see the force that pushes it out. And as I read your stuff and your mind is revealed to me in your newsletters and so on, it's a philosophical, spiritual thing. You know, I feel as things get really dark, there's a new enlightenment coming. There's going to, sooner or later, it's just going to be cast off all this facade of crap, and it's what always happens. It was the court jester. It was the news source. It was the rumor mill. It was the king's whatever and who said in the official decree of I'm hammering this thing up on a tree and everybody better read it and be like this. And I'm going, that's going away. And in
really
favor
is.
Of what?
Sooner or later, it's gone.
So I'm seeing... You know, there's going to be a big enlightenment. Why? Because it's bringing the cost of leave me aloneism down to somebody can buy a super duper RV and I'm out on the ocean or something. Kiss my butt. So I'm
technology is unstopped. Technology accretes rulership cycles.
Okay, say that again. And accretes, what's that mean?
It builds up layer by layer.
Okay.
Technology. Builds, it accretes rulership cycles. We win in the end.
Yeah, freedom always wins in the end, but it just gets really messy first, and then a cycle starts again, you know?
Yep.
And that cycle, I'm thinking, that's what I'm worried about, is they have to change up. If they, them, those can have some breakfast cereal or additive in the air, food, water, to make you go, well, hell, of course what you say, you know? Boom, they're on
right.
It. You know, so I'm just trying to survive and not, Well, I need your help, man.
I understand.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on and explaining it to us. You know, and there's, what's your next focus going to be in the next month?
I think the next one is going to be using crisis for fun and profit.
Oh, that'd be a coming. Yeah, here we go. I have children, you know, and they're like, fortunately, And I just had my 12th grandchild just this last weekend.
Congratulations.
And so I don't get to put away those baby toys for like ever. I mean, they, you know, it's 15 years of baby toys. But the each one of these kids, as they, you know, come into the world, the circumstances are greatly different than from the first grandchildren to these now.
Yeah.
But the battle is pretty much the same, though. For my kids, they're, you know, can you take advantage of cycles? Well, I'm, you know, fortunately, three of the four have sold their homes and moved in and rented. They got a chunk of money that they're sitting on. They got, I mean, at 30, you know, they're like way ahead of me already. And I'm going, all right, so let's wait for the next. Well, we need to buy, and some, you know, wife or husband is going, oh, we need that. This is all going to take a dump. You guys made out like bandits when you bought a bunch of stuff back in 11. It's going to happen again. You sell now, you wait. And I think they, you know, when you got your sibling over there come out 50, 100 ahead, you know, doing what dad said, guess what happens? You know?
Yeah.
It's not because dad says it, it's because you did it. So,
right. So they learned it from their sister, not from you.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and what I'm thinking is there's another, because Arizona and Nevada and so on is always one of the first to take the dump, and then it starts, you know, on the upswing again.
Yeah, it seems that way.
And and here we go. And they'll do whatever, drop in the interest rate, whatever, it doesn't matter. And right after they drop the interest rates, things went to shit anyway. So
that's right.
They knew it was coming. So I'm the next real estate bust is it'd be a coming. And I'm when it happens,
it
I think it's going to. And nobody, you know, like, Ernie, if you keep saying that, you'll make it happen. I'm like,
yeah, well.
What? You know, I'm glad I'm that influential. You know?
Yeah, right. When I'm on, you know, when I'm on Sunday morning TV or, you know, whatever else, you know, every day, you know, every week, then maybe I have some influence.
Right. Well, it's people like you that be really, ooh, man, I must lift, you know. All right. Thanks for spending time with me, Paul. I'll talk to you next time.
All right, Ernie, thanks.
Bye. Peace.
Bye-bye.